Okay, good morning, Chair Carpenter, Commission Director Suswin, Deputy Director Joe Storr. For the record, my name is Eric Netherland, and I am the Science Division Manager in the Fish Program. And next to me is the Eric number two, Eric Kinney, Hatchery Division Manager. We all know he's Eric number one, and I'm Eric number two. So today we'll be providing you with an update, a status update on the hatchery and fishery reform policy, the project to review our policy. So as you know, in June of 2018, the Commission suspended elements of our hatchery and fishery reform policy and directed the agency to conduct a review of that policy, update the science, and then come back to the Commission with some recommendations for policy language updates. So today, as I said, this is a status update on that project, and then we'll also be going through the process by which we'll be evaluating that. So that's the purpose of today. And so to do that, we will go, here's an outline of what we'll talk through. We'll give you a brief overview of hatcheries, a little bit of background. We'll also go in a little bit and talk a little bit about the hatchery and fishery reform policy. We have a little bit of a timeline on the original development of that policy briefly. Then we'll review the Commission's decision to review that policy, and then we'll get into the project overview and timeline, and then there will be time for questions. So with that, I'll hand it over to Eric Kinney, and he'll walk through a handful of slides.
Hi. Thanks, Eric. So I'm going to cover just kind of an overview of hatchery in general and a little bit about risks and benefits and a couple other slides. We operate 80 facilities across the state, with the first one being constructed in 1895 on the Kalama River in southwest Washington, now is known as Fowler Creek Hatchery. Our annual releases total 135 million salmon, 6 million steelhead, and 16.5 million trout. Hatcheries have multiple purposes, including harvest, conservation, and mitigation. The majority of our hatcheries either fall under U.S. v. Washington, the boat case of 1974, or the U.S. v. Oregon baloney case of 1969. The only areas that do not fall under these federal court cases are the Lower Columbia below Bonneville Dam or Willapa Bay, or in Willapa Bay. So benefits and risks. Benefits, more than $228 million in economic benefit from fisheries in Puget Sound and Columbia River. This does not include the Washington coast or our trout facilities, our trout production. 75% of all fish caught originate from hatchery production. There are cultural benefits to our treaty tribes and our local communities. Now to the risk side. Risks, there is multiple risks with hatchery production, either being genetic, ecological, or facilities. Some of our facility constraints include, you know, fish passage or screening for our intakes. So hatchery reform, what is it? It's a scientific and systematic redesign of our hatchery program to assist in recovering wild salmon and steelhead while still providing sustainable fisheries. You might ask why. It's important to improve our hatchery effectiveness, to ensure compatibility between production and recovery plans, and again, to support sustainable fisheries. I'm going to turn it back over to Eric.
All right, thank you. So in gearing up for this project, the whole team wanted to better understand the discussions that occurred leading up to the policy adoption. So to do that, we went back and listened to the audio transcripts. There aren't many TVW, but there are. Everything's on audio transcripts, and there are quite a few materials. So we went through that and really just tried to listen to what was the landscape and what was the commission thinking as they led up to that decision. So we thought it'd be helpful just to provide you a summary of that, and so that's what this slide's about. What is not on this slide was important, and maybe two things. As you know, in the late 1990s, the ESA listings, I didn't put those on this slide, but that was the context. And then in 2000, Congress funded the hatchery reform project, which created the Hatchery Scientific Review Group, and that happened in 2000, and that was also part of the landscape, but I didn't put that on this slide. So starting with this slide in 2006 and 2008, or from 2006 to 2008, there were some important initiatives that the agency was working on, including 21st Century Salmon and Steelhead Initiative. That was, post-listing, this is when all the watershed recovery plans and NOAA recovery plans were coming into play, and so we were looking at implementing those recovery plans at that point. So there were initiatives around that. And as part of that, we were looking as an agency to update and modernize our hatchery practices. So that's the landscape within which the policy was developed. And then in July of 2008, Governor Gregoire sent a letter to the Fish and Wildlife Commission requesting an update on four items, and two of those were hatchery reform and marked selective fisheries. The other one was the economic benefits of fisheries, and then the fourth item that she asked for an update on was the economic benefit and the tourism. So she wanted to have an idea of recreational tourism. The reason for that letter is that there was a disaster declaration on fisheries, and so she wanted to notify the agency that, hey, there was there's been a declaration. That's the good news. We'll be reimbursed, but how are we doing? And so that was the impetus for the letter. The commission then, in January of 2009, sent a letter back to the governor with a response on how we were doing and replied to her letter. And then in March of 2009, the Fish and Wildlife Commission directed staff to develop the hatchery reform policy. And as far as I can tell, that was the first time that, that is when the commission directed the staff to develop the policy. And so then there are a whole lot of meetings that I didn't want to include in here, but, there was quite a bit of dialogue for those of you that remember. And that process ended came to a conclusion in October of 2009, and then in November of 6, 2009 is when the policy was adopted by the Fish and Wildlife Commission, and that is the policy that is in place currently, and there, to my knowledge, haven't been any revisions to that policy. So I'm going to briefly review that policy. There is a copy of the policy in your packet, and so you can look through that. The items that Eric went through a moment ago were really extracted right out of the policy. So the first one was the definition, and the next one was the intent. I don't need to repeat those. The policy, the intent is about balancing the need for sustainable fisheries with the need to have naturally spawning populations, and that's the underpinning of the policy. So the policy has 11 guidelines. And I thought it would be helpful just to go through those in summary fashion, as you have that policy in front of you, there's quite a bit of language in each of these guidelines. But the first guideline is about using principles and standards of the HSRG. That's a Hatchery Scientific Review Group. There's two pieces. There's using the standards, and then there's a second part to that policy guideline number one, which is about adaptively managing programs. That's guideline number one. Number two is about implementing broodstock management standards. That means operating our hatcheries to reduce genetic and ecological risks. Number three is about developing watershed scale plans to implement the hatchery reform policy, or hatchery reform. Number four is about externally marking salmon and steelhead, listed there, and there's a guideline further down about marked selective fisheries, so you have to mark them to identify them for identification, but also for fisheries. Secure sufficient funding for hatchery facilities. So there's actually two guidelines in the policy around funding. The first one, this one, is about facilities. There'll be a later one that's around operations. So number six is about implementing hatchery reform on a schedule that's consistent with the 21st Century Salmon and Steelhead Initiative. And as I mentioned, that was in play at the time. And number seven is about providing an annual progress report to the Fish and Wildlife Commission. Now, if you haven't seen a report in front of the commission for a couple of years, that doesn't mean that they're not doing the report. The commission has set that task to the Fish Committee, so the report now comes to the Fish Committee. And that's and then that committee reports back to the commission. So that was a decision that the commission made. So there's the report still being generated. Number eight is about developing alternative fishing gear. And number nine is that second funding piece. This one's about hatchery operations. That first one was about the facilities. And then we're rounding the bend here. There's only 11. So the next one is about implementation for marked selective fisheries. So we mark the fish, and then we selectively fish for them. And then the final guideline that is in the policy is to work with our tribal co-managers to establish these wild cell-mounted management zones. So, in June of 2018, the commission put forward a motion and passed a motion to do two primary things. And one is, the first piece is to review all sections and aspects of the hatchery and fishery reform policy. And the second item is that was part of that motion was to suspend the policy guidelines 1, 2, and 3. So those are the first three of those guidelines that I just showed you. And then as part of the review, there is explicit language in the motion language, which is also in your packet, so you can read that in detail. But I just extracted some of the key elements. One is to examine performance results of the policy since its adoption. So I look at that as a performance evaluation of the policy. The other thing the review should include is to update the scientific elements. And then, as I mentioned at the beginning of the talk, we want to update the policy language. Then there are a host of considerations in that motion language. I just extracted some of those highlights here, but we'll certainly be taking that in consideration. For example, accommodating southern resident killer whale prey initiatives, etc. So what the team did is we looked at that motion language and actually did a Tammy did a fabulous job of capturing those. She's not here to get the kudos, but she did a great job, I thought, of capturing the dialogue that went on, because there was quite a bit of dialogue, and she did a great job in that motion language, so that was helpful. But there are four project elements that came up that we're tackling. One is to do the policy review, science review, robust engagement, and then we'll come back to the commission with a report with recommendations. So those are the key elements. Now I'm just going to go through a high-level timeline to walk you through what to expect. So if we start in June of 2018, that's when the decision was made, or the motion was put forward. And so immediately following that, there was quite a bit of interest from the decision, from the commission's decision. And so what our primary goal was at that point was to really do respond and reach out to folks who had questions. And and I'll get to what those were in a second here, but that was really our effort. And in that process, that really helped us to scope what we should really be trying to tackle. So these two things happened simultaneously, and then out of that came these three high-level project elements that will run from, they've already started, so we've started on all of these, and they will run until the late summer. And the first one in yellow is public engagement, but also tribal engagement, and we are actually going to be on two pathways for that. And then the second one, as I said, is a policy review will be led by department. And then the science review, it will be led by Washington Academy of Sciences. And I'll get into details on all of these here in a second. But that will run till September. And then we'll come back to you in September at the September meeting with a more formal update on and a presentation with the recommendations. There'll be some time for public comment, a couple of months, and then we're aiming towards a decision in November is the goal. And so here's just the commission engagement. I already talked through this a little bit, but on top with the white, that's the Fish and Wildlife presentation update. So this is where we are now. That's our status update. We'll go away, do some work. We'll come back to the full commission in September with a presentation aiming towards that November timeline for a decision, like I just said. But we will also, along the bottom there, we will be, as needed, as desired, we'll be checking in with the Fish Committee on a monthly basis if needed or if wanted on that front. So what I'm going to do now for the remainder of our talk is really just go through these four items that I just highlighted there in red. I'm going to talk through the early response, then I'll talk through the main project elements, and then we'll be working towards questions. So in terms of early response and coordination, there was both formal and informal feedback. So we received letters and correspondence, as well as the governor's office received letters and correspondence around the commission's decision, or in the case of the Northwest Indian Fisheries Commission, it was leading up to that decision. But nonetheless, the Northwest Fisheries Indian Commission and tribes sent individual letters to Governor Inslee around hatchery reform and the HSRG. NGOs sent letters to the governor, as well as some congressional members. And we heard from a whole slew of concerned individuals across the spectrum. And then we also received informal feedback for requests. So we talked to governor's office staff. We heard from some of our congressional delegation staffers that they wanted information. We heard from NOAA and our salmon recovery organizations. And so we had a range of opinions. This in no way marks everything we heard, but I just wanted to give you a sampling. You know, we heard a lot of concern, but there were concerns over different things. You know, certainly there was concern that the agency was abandoning an all-age approach and abandoning hatchery reform. We heard that. We heard their concern that the agency was abandoning science. We had a fair amount of agreement that it was time to review the policy. So I think there was a fair amount of agreement across the board. But there was a concern that the policy was suspended during this review, so that we did hear that. And then there was a fair amount of support from citizens and others about, you know, support for the decision to the review and suspend the policy and maybe change the policy. But there was also concern that there be some process that folks could engage, and they wanted a robust public process. So we heard that loud and clear. And then there were letters that came then we heard from the tribes and the Northwest Indian Fisheries Commission. They had concerns about the HSRG in particular, and they voiced those in a letter to the governor. So we had a whole host of responses. This is just a sampling. One is this. I think this was rarely. This was really on the front edge of Director Suswin's. More or less when you first got on board, but Director jumped right out of the gate and sent a letter to NOAA, Regional Administrator Barry Tom, and explaining the commission decision. I think he worked with many commissioners on that letter just to explain where the agency was coming from, what our goal was. We had response and meetings with governor's office, and then we had regional meetings where we met with regional recovery organizations. Actually, those were actually very well received. So we had Ron Warren and Jeff Davis as our ADs, together with senior staff, go out and met with groups, North Sound, South Puget Sound, Lower Columbia. So that was really well received. So as well as individual emails, letters. So all that was happening in the fall, like in the summer and early fall. So what that led us to, given all of that activity, it led us to this conclusion that, you know, we cannot do, there's no way we can do this in a black box, and if we do, it's all going to blow up on us at the commission meeting when we come back in September. And it also revealed to us that there's a lot to learn from folks, and we wanted to get that information. So there's two kind of engagement pieces. One is with the co-managers, and that will be us working with our co-managers and with the commission, both the Northwest Indian Fisheries Commission as well as the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission, but also working with individual tribes. And we've started that with the commission, and we're just reaching out to the individual tribes now. Also, there will be a public and partner engagement piece, and we recognize that we need, while the staff will be heavily engaged in that, very much engaged, we do need a consultant to help us with facilitating to make sure that we have a third party that can, you know, just help us digest what we're hearing and make sure that people feel like this isn't just something the department's doing, but that there's a third party that can help us navigate that. So we are in the process of securing a small contract to help facilitate that public engagement. That would involve facilitated meetings. We would solicit feedback, and we would help summarize those key messages so that all of you will have a really good idea what people think about this process and the policy. Then the other piece is the policy review. This will be led by us and our staff, and I don't have them listed here, but There'll be people that are familiar to you, Joe Anderson and Ken Warhite and those folks. That's a different group. So this is the policy review and evaluation. We'll have staff leading this part, which we'll go through and look at those 11 guidelines and principles that we just talked through. But one thing we heard loud and clear from the commission as well as the director is we want this to be thorough, but we also want it to be digestible. And we wanted to make sense in terms of how we translate that evaluation back into something that we can make some updates to the policy. So we're shooting towards a report card structure. I've been working with the director, Ron Warren. We'll continue to work on that to make sure that it hits the mark in terms of the level of detail, but also the level of simplicity. That's our goal. So where are we in that process? We've done the outline, we're scoping, we're looking at report card metrics, and we're in the data compilation and reviewing those metrics to make sure they hit the mark. And then we'll begin actual heavy lifting of the policy review and evaluation. So this piece I'm working very closely with Eric Kinney and his staff and some of my staff on the policy review piece. The science review and update is a piece it's where we've contracted with the Washington Academy of Sciences, and we've contracted with them to do three things. We wanted early interaction with an overview of the early interaction on the outline of our science review and some of the early products. So that's underway. They will facilitate a science workshop that will be open to folks, but it will also be focused on this science element, and then they'll conduct a final peer review of that product. DFW staff are actually writing that, so this is where Joe Anderson and Ken Warhite and others are actually in the lead doing the heavy lifting of writing, but we're fully engaged with the Academy of Science. They have assembled a panel, and that's who will be doing the work on their side. And then where are we? We've completed our outline. We're actually due. There was a little bit of a delay with the government shutdown, but actually, amazingly, we moved through that pretty quickly and were able to sort of skirt that delay and stay on track. And they have their comments due back to us on our outline on this coming Monday on February 11th. So that's underway. And then we'll work towards a first draft in April, May. And then we also, right now, we're doing early planning for that workshop. Again, they're leading, the Academy of Science is leading that workshop, but we'll be heavily engaged. Okay. So just a summary and next steps. One thing that I said this about three times, I'm going to say it one more time. One of our goals is to ensure there's an open and transparent and robust process for folks to engage. There's a lot of interest in this topic, and I want to make sure that we can hear from folks on this. And then those project elements, I'm not going to go through all those right here, but just to remind you, there are these core elements that we're moving forward over the next several months into the late summer. And then that will end with a report and a recommendation back to all of you. And then, like I said, we will be meeting with the director as needed, as he wants, and to give him updates. We'll be attending the FISH committee on monthly if needed. And then we'll come back to you in September with a briefing, shooting towards that November timeline for a decision. So with that, I will end my presentation, and I'm happy to take questions. And Eric is too.
Commissioner McKenzie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And let me start by saying thanks to the staff for all the work here, not just this excellent presentation, but as we learn in here, how much you've had to handle over the course of the time since last June in terms of responding to this and thinking about the process. Thank you very much for all that hard work. There's a considerable amount to that, way beyond probably what we even fathom here by this presentation. I do have a question, maybe two, about clarity on your presentation. I have a few comments that might be questions on guidance on where this goes from here, but I'm going to withhold those until after public comment because there may be some other things that come up during public comment that could influence any guidance on how this goes from here. My question on clarity has to do with slide number 15 and the public process there. Let me also say that your attention to the theme of having this be open and transparent to everybody is certainly what I think the commission intended to start with. So thank you for all the efforts to make sure that that's the case. To whatever extent someone out there might say, oh, this has been a closed situation that didn't consider this and didn't consider that and was pre-decided here and pre-decided there, we certainly want to eliminate that from ever being considered a serious criticism. The bullet that says fourth bullet down. There's some support from folks, but there was concern about the public process. So this is when you first started hearing about things. You've stressed throughout here that this you're designing it to be open and transparent. What was their concern to start with, and are there any remaining concerns from anybody in the public about, from your perspective right now anyway, of where this is headed and whether or not they still have concerns about the public involvement?
Yeah, so that came from more individual conversations I had either with some of it was follow-up on letters that the agency received. And their concern mainly was, hey, we have information to share, but is the agency going to go away and work in a black box? Their concern was there had been no information out there on what that public process would look like. So I think it was just more of a general concern. I would say that people probably still have concern because I'm just getting going on this public process. So I think while we met with watersheds, I think everyone we've talked to, we've articulated this. So I think people are giving us the benefit of the doubt. And I think, you know, I met with some individuals even yesterday after the committee, Fish Committee meeting who had sent letters and assured them that we're on this pathway, we're going to try and get feedback. So I think the proof is in the pudding. I think people just wanted to communicate that they wanted it to be open. They didn't, and specifically, they didn't want a meeting where the staff come to them. We come to them with a whole bunch of paper. We present a bunch of stuff. We dump a bunch of paper down, and then we say, and give you 10 minutes for feedback. Thank you for your input. We're going to go away and leave. And I think, you know, that's appropriate for the commission meetings. It makes sense. This is, you know, that's, but we wanted to provide something that was more fluid and that allowed the public more time for input. So I think that's what they were concerned about. So that's what we'll take into consideration. So to be short, it's, I think the concern is out there, but I think people that I've reached out to feel like, okay, it sounds like they're on the right track. So the proof will be in the pudding.
Thank you, and I would just say that at the end of this agenda item, when a game plan is solidified, that if we could have some sort of news release or something on the website or something
Excellent.
People could point to so that if anybody hasn't heard about what happened today and remains concerned that they don't know, that somehow that notice gets out. I know that the chair of the Fish Committee has been open situationally to have public comment at Fish Committee meetings, which seems to be an important part of your process. So that's an opportunity there as well. But I'll save the rest of these until after public comment.
Mr. Baker?
The suspension of those three principles as we go through this this review generated comments that surprised me. With their just anger, there was a lot of people that were very, very, very upset with us. And one of the response that at least I gave, and I think most of us replied with, is we are not using this review period as sort of a loophole to go out and willy-nilly spread salmon smoke all over the watersheds. And we are not abandoning science. To which some responded, yes, you are. And so I'd like to hear, I'm actually looking for a little maybe comfort from you that we are still paying very, very close attention to the what we learned with hatchery reform earlier this decade and the one prior, and we are not doing any of those things that we carefully assured people we wouldn't do.
All right. Thank you for that question, Commissioner Baker. So I'd answer that on two fronts. One front is it would, and this has been described before, it'd be very difficult to, there's no way we can turn our hatchery systems on a dime. You know, the programs that are in place are, you know, they've been put in place over the last several years. And we also have commitments to, you know, adhere to ESA standards and within our HGMPs. So I think, those pieces are in place. The other piece I'll speak to is the science and adhering to science. So the director wrote a letter to NOAA that outlined that we will be putting science first. You all met with the governor himself, and which is on TVW, and you can watch that. And during that discussion, there was a robust discussion about science, and the governor even directed you to make sure that we follow the science, and Commissioner McIsaac was speaking to that as well. And so that, you know, in sort of reviewing all that led us to this place of, you know, we have very qualified scientists, and I think anybody you talk to would agree with that, and they know that. But we also wanted to, again, add some transparency, and so by separating our science review out, working with the Academy of Sciences, I've directed staff that your job is very simple. It's difficult, but it's also fairly straightforward. You are to review what the science has told us about, you know, the benefits, the risks of hatcheries, and how has hatchery reform performed as a concept, and you know where has it gotten us. So that's another reason. So then the commission, in my mind, can come back and say, okay, we can roll all that up for you and provide you with some recommendations, but you also be able to unpack that and say, well, here's how our policy is performed. Here's what the public has said about how they think we're doing, and here's what the current state of the science is. And again, we're going to be doing a review. There's other work out there. We'll be taking all this and summarizing it. So that's a couple of ways of which we're trying to, you know, unpack this a little bit so that when the commission looks at this, they can tease these things apart and say, okay, now here's how we want to move forward with some changes or not to the policy and the language. So,
thank you.
Is that helpful? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for that answer, and I appreciate all the attention that you all have done to try to make sure that anyone who criticizes this action as something that abandons the science, that's just not the case. And I'll refer to the materials in our packet here on the motion on page 8 of 12 of the dialogue that occurred to, again, say thank you. When this question came up, the direction from the commission to the staff was to ask the staff to use the best available science, to comply with ESA mandates, to negotiate with NIMS on any emerging science, and to abide by the hatchery genetic management plans, and negotiate with NIMS if there was any questions. And if there is a substantial elevation of how much risk to take on a level of protection from hatchery wild spawning interactions, to bring that decision back to the commission. And since you have not brought any question back about elevating risk to natural spawning populations or interactions or utilization of the best available science, then I presume you have been using the best available science and that there has not been any elevation of risk to hatchery wild populations of any significance since last June. And so for that, again, I'm expressing an appreciation, saying thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We have a public comment as part of this agenda item, and I will call you, pardon me, I'll call you up two at a time. And as you all know, there's a three-minute buzzer that goes off, so please wrap up your comments a sentence or two after you hear the buzzer. Thank you very much for that. Dave Kroonquist and John Beath. Do I do that now? Okay. He has a response to my question. Mr. Kroonquist.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, Commissioners, Director Susswind, and staff. My name is Dave Kroonquist. I live in Sequim, Washington. I'm here today on behalf of over 250 members of the North Olympic Peninsula and East Jefferson chapters of Puget Sound Anglers and also the Puget Sound Anglers State Board. We were pleased to see the Commission Policy C-3619 on hatchery and fishery reform has, after 9 years, finally been opened for review. The ESA listing of Chinook salmon and the signing off of 3619 was supposed to lead to recovery of our Chinook stocks. We aren't yet seeing a lot of results. For clarification, I want to reemphasize that we fully support the efforts to rebuild self-sustaining runs of Chinook and appropriate habitat improvements. Since 1989, we've seen a 44% decline in Chinook salmon production. Naturally spawning Chinook populations have continued to decline in many river basins. It appears that the southern resident killer whale population has also been on a similar downward trend that parallels the hatchery cuts. Billions of dollars have been spent, have been, and will continue to be spent to save wild, or as they more might properly be called, natural origin fish. Our habitat is finite and will never be fully recovered. A NOAA report in 2006 showed 22 Puget Sound River basins had Chinook runs. Interestingly, within those 22 rivers, 14 of the rivers were determined to have extinct run components. Some of those same rivers currently drive north of Falcon season-setting parameters. The position of Puget Sound anglers is that our natural origin populations of Chinook have been diluted over the past 124 years by out-of-basin transfer of hundreds of millions, if not billions, of eggs and fish. We would contend that hatcheries are, in reality, an artificial extension of the river environment, and the base stock for all hatchery programs came from the river flowing past the hatchery. We feel that we have a composite population of naturally spawning Chinook in the Puget Sound Basin, not wild fish. Of critical importance today is the need to provide the Chinook prey base for the JK and L pods of the southern resident killer population. They are starving, and any sizable Chinook returns are 3 years out. Secondarily, but as important, is to rebuild Washington's reputation as a premier salmon fishing destination. Increased hatchery production will greatly improve the economic outlook for our coastal communities and businesses that depend on a viable fishery program. The department should consider historical harvest numbers of the mid-1980s as an important measurement metric. We are asking that the capabilities of the state's hatchery system be utilized in an aggressive, integrated program to rebuild our natural origin Chinook returns. Thank you again for opening up 3619 for review. We look forward to working with you and staff on this critical project. And you have all received a packet from Puget Sound Anglers on your table today, so with some background information applicable to some of the comments that I've made.
Thank you, Dave. John?
Good morning, Chairman. Can you hear me? Good morning, Chairman, Commissioners, Director Susswind, and staff. My name is John Beath. I am from Sequim, Washington. I represent the Puget Sound Anglers on the Olympic Peninsula. I'm also editor-writer for SalmonChronicles.com, and I own Squid Pro Tackle. Many factors have contributed to low numbers of Puget Sound Chinook and low numbers of southern resident orca whales in Washington State, but the culprits, in my mind, are easy to pinpoint. Number one, Chinook hatchery production has decreased by 44% since the 1980s. Number two, pinniped predation on smolt and adult salmon has increased to a level that threatens Chinook populations. Number three, predation by mergansers, cormorants, Caspian terns, and other species is a major impact on smolts. And number four, is habitat degradation, which is an ongoing issue and won't be solved anytime soon. The solution, in my mind, is not as difficult as it seems. In July of 2006, the NOAA report that Dave mentioned stated that 14 Puget Sound rivers now have extinct runs of wild salmon. The report says these rivers now have hatchery or natural spawn runs of Chinook. Instead of fighting over wild salmon, which in reality no longer exist, we should embrace hatchery origin fish and natural spawn Chinook, or as I like to call them, undocumented Chinook. A good first step would be to increase hatchery production to the 1982 levels in Puget Sound Basin. This increase would benefit the southern killer whales, the sport, tribal, and commercial fisheries. We should also begin lethally removing Puget Sound pinnipeds. Seal and sea lion populations have exploded and overpopulated to the point of disaster on many of our sport and commercially harvested fish stocks, especially our declining runs of Chinook. Furthermore, pinnipeds don't look for missing fins. They eat what they can catch. We also need to consider what our Chinook feed on while in our local waters. A recent British Columbia study showed herring as a major food source for Chinook salmon in the Salish Sea. Without a steady food source, Chinook can't survive. Pinnipeds also eat these herring. Maybe we need to slow down or stop commercial fisheries for herring and related fisheries such as the kelp and going for the roe, so that the salmon prey base is expanded. Expanding herring populations will benefit other species as well. Washington State and the federal government have the shared responsibility to manage Puget Sound. From my perspective, it is time to end the long, unsuccessful path of wild-only Chinook management. From the NOAA 2006 report and from WDFA planning records, we feel that our Puget Sound Chinook are a composite stock and not the wild fish of the 19th century. Additionally, we can't forget the treaty tribes who co-manage our fisheries and have a U.S. Supreme Court decision on their side. Washington State must provide adequate numbers of Chinook salmon to the tribes. Again, the answer is simple. Increase hatchery production and end the decades of failed attempts to resurrect extinct runs of wild Chinook. Increase salmon hatchery production to early 1982 levels or above. A Chinook is a Chinook is a Chinook, whether it is wild, whether it's hatchery, or a naturally spawning, or as I call them, undocumented Chinook. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next group is Ron Garner and Dave Johnson.
Turn the cameras off in the parking lot later. It's going to be a rumble.
Good morning, Director, Chair. Congratulations on being reappointed, and the rest of the commissioners. Appreciate the opportunity to be here today, and would like to thank Dave and John previously for coming up here and the hard work they put in to for these displays that you have, presentations. There's a lot of work done on that, and it has a lot of merit. It's really hard to dispute the numbers when you look through all those transfers for the Chinook all over Washington State. It really tells a pretty compelling story that maybe what we've been doing hasn't been so great. I want to thank you on the suspension of the HSRG to have time to look at it, and abandoning science, kind of going right to the heart of the matter. Where was the science? Where's this political, where's this peer-reviewed paper that this whole foundation's built on? It's a biological opinion. And so a lot of people don't know that that's the whole foundation, and everything's created off that, all the way up through NOAA and the federal government. And it kind of imposes a lot of questions. It hasn't been working. And so I think going forward, there has to be some more review, maybe some better science, which the state is working on, which I really appreciate. But you also know that I'm probably on the budget advisory group, and I didn't get to go in on Monday, I think it was, to meet with Senator Vandaway, and Director Sussman kind of said what I wanted to say on this bill 5617. So while there's a bill out there to increase hatchery production, which thankful to all of you for the $50 million increase, this gillnet ban bill takes the tools out of the toolbox, as you said, to be able to do it. There's not an avenue to adjust anything. It just flat out says no cleanup, which isn't going to work. So I'm hoping that we'll have some support from some of you to talk to Senator Vandaway and Senator Solomon on trying to help them understand what they're saying, because it's this one way or that one way when they both sit there and they cross each other and they won't work together. That those commercials are the tool in the toolbox to clean up for us to be able to keep producing this. And if we shut down the production for the whales, that which we asked from the Orca Task Force out of you to help us put production back together, it's a nail in the coffin for the orcas. And I don't think anybody wants to sign that death warrant. So we're going to need some help to make sure we readjust this bill and this net ban doesn't go into place, that we still have tools in the toolbox. So I think that's for the most part, and I'll hand this over to Dave.
David?
Good morning, Chair. Congratulations. Good morning, Director, Commissioners. My name is Dave Johnson, President of Puget Sound Anglers Westport Division. I'm also the newly elected representative for recreational fishermen for SAS. I grew up in Gig Harbor as a kid, commercial fished all through junior high and high school, and I'm here in support of lots of hatchery production. Back in the 70s and 80s when I was commercial fishing out of Gig Harbor, there was enough fish for everybody. It's not a netting problem. It's not a gillnet problem. It's not a seining problem. Same with down in the Columbia River. We need the cleanup so we can produce more fish. And I'm here in support of that. We used to have a 4-fish limit in South Puget Sound for blackmouth and kings. It was not a problem to go out there and catch them, especially for winter blackmouth. I remember going out there on Christmas Eve, and Robert Goulet was at Point Defiance singing to all the boats. I miss my childhood because I wasn't able to give it to my son in the same fishery, and I just see it declining, and I'd love to get some more production. It's not a net issue in my mind because we had lots of fish back then, and we had enough fish for everybody. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Commissioner Kehoe.
Not a question, but a comment. I do want to thank Puget Sound Anglers and Ron in particular with delivering messages to our legislators. I mean, that's crucial, particularly with regard to the fee bills. I know it's early in the session, though, as far as the budget issues, but I think your support, BPAG support, is going to be critical in making sure that the department can carry through its mission. And I just want to say that and really appreciate all that you do, Ron, and your organization. So thank you.
The next two, Greg King and Jamie Glasgow.
Good morning, Commissioners, and Director Suswin, and Chair Carpenter. I testified on this back when in June, and, you know, this is a hatchery science review. Now, I'm not college educated, but a review has a beginning and an end, okay? And I'm all for the science. I want to hear the science. I want to hear what plays out and everything in this whole thing. As I'll state it again, HSRG has killed the Cowlitz River. Okay. Oh, Greg King, friends of the Cowlitz Vice President, Cowlitz Advisory Group. This HSRG has killed the Cowlitz River. 3 dams and no fish passage. I got some numbers here that was sent to our friend Butch Smith, and this is from 1967 to 1976. We harvested on the 10-year average was 6,648,500 fish in Washington State, all species. Wow. Nobody was complaining then. There was no Hatchery Science Review Group. And now, the last time I was here, they said that it would take 400 to 500 years to recover wild salmon. Now, I'm on the same path as Puget Sound Anglers. We support Puget Sound Anglers, and they support us. What wild fish? I mean, Dr. McIsaac has just talked about the conservation hatchery. We've talked about the supplementation of summer Chinooks at Hanover Reaches, all hatchery programs, you know. We're just trying to reverse genetics here is all it is. I mean, I'm not educated, but I can see this. We're trying to reverse the genetics. It says, I am Scottish, okay? You'll never get the Scotsman out of me, okay? You'll never get the wild out of a wild fish. That hatchery fish has that genetics in it. It always will. Like, I'm always going to be Scottish. So let's try not to fool anybody here, because the average sportsman that buys a fishing license, he doesn't know what HSRG is. He just wants to catch a fish, you know. That's what I want to do. The Callis River in southwest Washington is devastated with no steelhead. We have no steelhead runs. It's terrible. And I just come to find out, I read an article here about the Clackamas River, and I found out that those summer run steelhead had no adverse effects on the winter run steelhead. Gee, that's amazing. All this is because of this Hood River study done in 1992, I think, that Cousteau did, and everybody went with it. Oh, hatchery fish are bad. Well, they're not so bad, are they? If you listen to Mr. McIsaac about the conservation hatcheries. And I just have to go back to that. Hatchery fish are not bad. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. Jamie, before you start, Andy, you're the caboose on this, so you might as well come up too. You're next. Andy Marks. Jamie.
Morning, Chair, Director, Commissioners. Thanks for the time. Jamie Glasgow, I'm Director of Science for Wild Fish Conservancy. I'm also Scottish.
Hit the buzzer again.
I'm really struggling with deciding where to start, but I think what makes the most sense is maybe to circle back to the passage in the green sheet that Commissioner McIsaac was just reading from, because I do think it's an important one. It's the one I was drawn to in the sheet. And it reads, we expect staff to apply the best available evolving science, and goes on from there to say, and to abide by the provisions of the hatchery genetic management plans. That's where you stopped reading. But actually, the next phrase, I think, is the important one from my perspective, which is that do not involve suspended policy direction. And so that implies that the provisions within HGMPs that do involve suspended policy direction won't be adhered to. And that's one of several things that that alarm me, and I just wanted to provide that clarification. Reviewing the science is good. I'm very supportive of that. Science isn't static. We need to revisit it. We've learned a lot over the decade since the 3619 policy was passed. There have been a large number of new publications that have shed more light on the breadth of genetic and ecological impacts that hatcheries can have on wild fish populations. And even if we don't like the results of peer-reviewed and published research because it complicates our agendas, we all have a responsibility to keep up with the science. Denying an overwhelming body of science is irresponsible. Ignoring the weight of evidence sets us on the wrong path and puts the burden on future generations. This is true whether we're talking about climate change or hatchery reform. That's why I have to question your decision to suspend Chinook PHAS thresholds recommended by HSRG. I have yet to see any science that suggests PHAS limitations are dispensable. To the contrary, strict limits on PHAS are consistently found to be fundamental to responsible hatchery management that does not compromise the recovery of wild salmon. The department's own science staff have said as much, but they're not being heard. Abandoning policy guidelines 1, 2, and 3 before the science review and implementing the proposed massive increase in Puget Sound Chinook hatchery production can only further compromise recovery of ESA-listed Puget Sound Chinook. It's a setback to the progress we've made, and it could ensure an endangered listing for Chinook. There are better alternatives, and we would very much appreciate the opportunity to meet with you to discuss them. I do appreciate the talk about transparency. I do think these coming weeks are going to be really important, and we will look forward to that transparency and opportunities to engage as this moves forward. We haven't really seen it yet. I only learned today that the Academy has already been charged with a direction. I don't know what direction that is, and that's really important for the public to understand what exactly has been asked of them and what the breadth of their review will be. Thanks again for the time.
Thank you, Jimmy. Mr. Kehoe.
Yeah, thank you for your testimony.
Notwithstanding the temporary suspension, at least, of several aspects of the hatchery reform policy, does it, though, not give you and your organization some comfort, though, that the HGMP permit requirements for our hatcheries, which do address PHAS issues, that those are still in place? Does that give you or your organization any comfort knowing that?
I guess if that's true, that's good to hear. That's not exactly what I read in the green sheet. So I'm very happy to hear you say that. I will also point out, however, that despite those thresholds having been in place for the past several years, since HGMPs have been in place for Chinook hatcheries in Puget Sound, for example, we have not been meeting those thresholds. So regardless of the fact that they're in the HGMPs and are required to be met, they're not being met. So there is little comfort, I guess, is the short answer.
Okay, good. I just, because it's not written in the motion, I mean, that's clearly the intent, I can tell you, of the commission is to continue to, of course, we don't have any choice not to follow the permit restrictions that are in these HGMPs. So I just want to make that clear for you and for everybody. The department is still abiding by those the requirements in those permits. So just so you know that.
Right. Just to reiterate, in most of the hatcheries being run in Puget Sound, those requirements are not being met.
But that has nothing to do with the commission's actions, I can assure you that. I mean, it's an ongoing process.
Commissioner McIsaac.
Chairman, and appreciate the critical reading of the material here and the discussion that occurred at the time. It's hard to convey all the different nuances there. So I'd be glad to talk to you later. I guess I'd concur in the spirit of what Commissioner Kehoe said, that the direction was not to ignore our hatchery genetic management plans. The previous phrasing talks with negotiating with the National Marine Fisheries Service on ESA compliance. So while it's difficult to get all the nuances here, to whatever extent we had an HGMP provision that would if abided by strictly, would not have allowed us to even speak to a southern resident killer whale prey initiative to negotiate with NIMS about that. The intent is in that, and I'm not even describing it properly right now and won't try to do it here on the record, but I would be glad to meet with you and try to give some clarity as to that intent so that you don't feel like the direction was to abandon our hatchery genetic management plans. That was not the intent.
I appreciate you saying that, and I do appreciate the difficulty. All hatchery issues are complex, and we're often put into a position where we may have, for example, 3 minutes to try to cover an awful lot of ground. And so I would very much like to take you up on that offer to meet and continue this discussion.
Made up of Commissioner Kehoe, Commissioner Graybill, Commissioner McIsaac, and myself. And our meetings are open to the public. They're not closed meetings. And we could schedule an agenda item with you and other interested parties in the spirit of sharing information and respectful guidance.
I think we should do that. That would be great.
Okay. Thanks for coming. Mr. Marks, looks like you got a little sun.
Maui's nice.
Torture.
Did you bring us something?
Is it in the bag? Yeah.
No, what I brought back, you don't want.
Oh.
Yeah. Good morning. My name's Andy Marks. I'm a member of the Coastal Conservation Association, but I'm here today speaking for myself. I did not intend to come here and speak. I'm a member of the Puget Sound Hatchery Action Advisory Group, which no longer exists. I was a member of the Puget Sound Harvest Advisory Group, which existed for a short period of time under Mr. Petillo's tutelage. I am a member of the Budget and Policy Advisory Group for the Department. I'm a member of the Puget Sound Steelhead Advisory Group. Ongoing with my colleague, Mr. Glasgow, and he and I find frequent opportunities to disagree, but in this I am in complete agreement with his testimony. We have an inconvenient truth, and the inconvenient truth is that the science behind 3619 is very clear that you have two tools to limit hatchery origin fish on the spawning grounds, and one is to catch them, remove them, or the other is to not produce them. And we have elected to not touch the harvest piece. The only group selectively removing hatchery fish is the recreational angler. And the tools that are in place for removing hatchery fish before they get on the spawning grounds are non-selective. So they take out the wild origin, natural origin, whatever term you want to use, fish in the same proportion that they exist in the wild. So it's an ineffective tool to manage the PHAS. The Mentor Creek episode should tell us something about the risks associated with putting all our eggs in the hatchery basket. And we have to have those wild genetics out there so that we can continue. That's what the science tells us. So the HSRG is the group of scientists that we have asked to bring us. They're aggregators and carriers of science, not the certainly not the fisheries managers, and they're certainly not the creators of the science. So to blame them for the declines in hatchery production that we have accepted as the only tool to try to manage PHAS is... I'll use the word naive. I don't know what the right word is. It's just not good, not accurate. So I'm a little bit at a loss, but I am going to say that I believe the knee-jerk reaction to suspend the policy or parts of the policy was exactly that, a knee-jerk, but I also believe that the science should withstand scrutiny and hard, heavy scrutiny every time you have an opportunity to do so. And if the science is accurate, it should stand at scrutiny. So that's the end of my comments. I thank you for your
thank you, gentlemen.
Opportunity to speak.
Thanks to the public for coming up on this issue as well. We're going to take a break in about 3 or 4 minutes. The director wanted to make a couple comments.
Thank you, Chair Carpenter. I thought I should provide some clarification. I think I created some confusion earlier when I gave a very awkward answer to the wrong question, I think, is what actually happened. So you had asked about the no-go zone on the Orca bill, and what I answered was in response to the moving mobile no-go zone around the whales, moving from 200 to 400. That, well, to me, that was no-go zone. I realized afterwards you were probably referring to the geographically fixed no-go zone along the side of San Juan Island in particular. That is not part of the bill.
Thank you very much for that explanation. Much appreciated. Commissioner McIsaac.
Yes, thank you. When we come back from break, we were delaying until after public comment some guidance on what we heard here in terms of the process. So when we do come back from break, I'll look forward to the opportunity to make some comments to the commission here.
You're wanting to make some guidance recommendations on agenda item four?
Yes. Yes. I was withholding those until after public comment, and I think after the break will be just fine.
Why don't we do it right now? That's, and then we'll take a break.
Okay.
While it's fresh.
Okay. Again, thanks to the staff about thinking so hard about the assignment here and how it might mesh. I just have a couple of comments on maybe the substance here and then one comment on the process. And maybe if I could ask the two Erics to come up here just in case they have some questions about this. Process on slide 18, at the top there's some bullets about the review of the policy performance since adoption, and you may have already thought about this, in terms of the direction to take a very thorough look at this and review where the policy has worked and where it hasn't worked, whether or not the policy has resulted in any successful population recoveries, and if so, where, I think that's very important information that I just wanted to stress that's very important. When we get around to a report card format of just going kind of red, yellow, green, and that kind of thing, that might be okay for many of these things, such as have we had enough money for all the capital costs? Yes or no? Have we had enough money for the operations? Yes or no? Those are fine, but on some of them, it might be useful to have just a little bit more. And if the case is that we've been falling far short of either of those, how much would be useful? Maybe that can be a fish committee type of exercise there. But anyway, I would just hope that you wouldn't get too short on that. But maybe the detail could happen in the fish committee. The matter of consulting with the salmon recovery boards, I think that was a shortcoming last June. And so I want to thank you for bringing that up and urge that you make special contact with them and the co-manager public process, and it may be you were already planning on doing that, but I just wanted to emphasize it. Most importantly, on the matter of the process, so on slide 13, where you get into the project timeline, in the direction last June, there was the idea that the staff provide alternatives and analysis for policy decision-making by the commission. And this is probably most important for policy guidelines 1, 2, and 3. Maybe there's some other spots in the policy, but if I work backwards on your chart there to the final decision, if we end up with a new document here, let's say at the September meeting, if we come up with a new document here that has some strikeouts and some changes that we want to have public comment on before there's a final adoption, some discussion about what the alternatives are for changes in these policies 1, 2, and 3 would be of interest. So what I was looking for originally was for policy guideline number 1, for example, that deals with the HSRG recommendations being used, that the commission have a chance to take a look at alternatives to that language. The commission may, in the end, want to adopt the language that's there without change in status quo. maybe there are some different alternatives that might be better. So at least one alternative to that, I would hope, would come out of the reviews that you've heard from everybody. Maybe there might be two alternatives. When would the commission hear about what alternatives ought to be looked at to this? And when would the commission decide which one of those would go out for public review in September? And so I don't know if the commission wants to just delegate that to the Fish Committee, and if that's true, then, you know, I would be comfortable with that. But it makes me think maybe there is another step in here in the process where the full commission looks at a range of alternatives and hears about them and maybe shrinks them or expands them or hears about the analysis before coming face-to-face in September with a strikeout draft that would go out for public review. So I'm offering that to the commission. If either of you want to make any comments about how that might fit into the process or not, I'd give you that opportunity now.
Well, I'll take a shot at that. Thank you, Commissioner McIsaac. This is Eric Netherland for the record. The way that it's laid out here would be having recommendations for language that we'd be proposing at the September meeting. Given what you just described, and given it really depends on the it depends on the level of changes to the policy. So if they're going to be extensive, I could see if that we would have recommendations at the September meeting and potentially then more of a looking at options with a strikeout sort of document maybe the following month or maybe at that November, and then pushing that final decision out a month. I could see that happening depending on how extensive those changes are going to be. So what I wanted to target here was we really do want to finish with these core products by the end of the summer, and I think there's, you know, depending on what comes out of that, I think there'll be a little time for the commission to decide, but I sort of see that as a transition from the staff doing our work in terms of the bulk of the heavy lifting, that we come forward with some recommendations. If those are extensive, then there might be some more discussion, and that could happen at the Fish Committee. Then we come out with some specific strikeout language. So again, I could see it extending out a month, but my point here is that by September, I want to come back to the commission with a product that can begin the commission process of evaluating the policy.
Okay, well, to the extent that the commission would like to weigh in on a range of alternatives for some of these very important ones, some of them aren't. I mean, like number 10 right here, define full implementation of selective fishing. That one might even disappear in the end. But for these other ones, it's pretty important. What is the alternative to number 1 that we would like to have analyzed or that you would suggest be analyzed? Should it just be one alternative or maybe there's two? That's a pretty important step. And I think it'd be very useful to all those people who are so concerned about this to take that part a little slowly and completely understand it. So I guess I would encourage that to either come to the front table I'd encourage it to be prepared to everybody coming out of the Fish Committee meetings where there could be a little more detail.
Comments? Okay. Thank you.